This is Production Pro. I'm Dan Rubottom. Recently, near the end of the COVID lockdown, I did a Facebook Live webinar with my good friends Richie Allen and Ray Givens. We talked about some strategies for churches that may be facing the new reality of live streaming each weekend post-COVID. Richie is a gifted worship leader and leadership coach with many years' experience in the church world. He was instrumental in connecting me to Hope City a few years ago. I also met Ray at Hope City, where he oversaw the technical AVL production in the room while I led the stream/broadcast team. All three of us got to collaborate to help bring each of the six services per weekend to life, all in a completely mobile situation. We talk about everything from camera gear to multicam editing in Final Cut Pro, Premiere and Resolve, to audio and pre-recorded versus live streaming, plus a little bit of Q&A at the end. My special thanks to Richie for putting this whole live event together and to both guys for letting me repost this here in my podcast. This one is a longer one, so buckle up and enjoy.
All right. So first of all, before you start spending tons of money on streaming, streaming stuff, let's talk through our options. Okay. So there are options when it comes to cameras and gear like that. So we can talk a little bit about that, and then I want to talk about a solution that could possibly help that. But there are a lot of questions. I'm seeing questions online even right now about, you know, what are some good cameras. Dan, can you talk into that just a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, what I always try to do is ask people, like, kind of what their church is like in terms of what size it is. What is the style of their pastor? You know, is he going to be stationary behind a pulpit, or is he going to be real dynamic and run around across the stage, or is he even going to run it through the audience? I mean, you know, that's going to totally dictate what kind of camera you get. The size of the building is going to determine what kind of camera you get, because some cameras systems are not able to go very far lengthwise mm-hmm. from the switcher. Like HDMI, you have mm-hmm. HDMI kind of solutions are great for a smaller building, or especially right now where we're, you know, if you're in a small studio, it's no problem. So there's some good cameras. I'm a real big fan of the Blackmagic Pocket Cinema Camera, yep. 4K and 6K. Both, I know I've got a couple and you've got some, Richie. And so they're really good because they're very, the picture quality is outstanding, and also they're very user friendly, much more so than a DSLR, because with the DSLR it's a hybrid camera that's built for stills and for video. So you've got tons of menu options that you're trying to wade through, and which ones do I turn on, turn off? And with the Blackmagic, the Pocket Cinema menu is just. It's like a smartphone. Like if you know how to run your iPhone,
it's the way that everybody's menu system should be.
Exactly.
It's amazing.
And even high end systems, I wish they were more like this menu system. It's just so, you know, even like a Red or an Alexa or anything. Those are built very purpose built. But you know, just the fact that you can double tap on the screen to do focus or pinch. To magnify the image so you can check your focus. Mm-hmm. Just very, you know, anybody could pick that up really quick that hasn't been on camera before.
So guys, that's a Blackmagic Pocket Cinema 4K and 6K. And there's some advantages. Yeah. The 6K has SDI out, right?
No. It doesn't have SDI, but it does have the EF mount. Okay. So if you have a lot of Canon glass, then that may be the way to go. But of course, you can put an adapter on the 4K.
That's what I did.
They did drop. Yeah, and me too. So they dropped the price on the 6K as well. So now it's under $2,000.
Oh.
So
wow.
It's less. It's of an issue. But you know, then you go up from there. There's solutions below it as well. But there's also, if you go up to like a Panasonic EVA-1, is really great. Not only because it has great image quality and a lot of features, but it has some live capabilities that other cameras in that price range don't have, such as Tally support with switchers. So
for those of you who don't know, Tally is the red light that shows up on the front of the camera so that people know that camera is live.
Exactly. So you have that kind of functionality built in, and then you can also go wireless with those cameras and still have Tally support and iris control as well. And then, you know, you go up to like the Vericam LT, which is what we bought for Hope City, and and I've put in a couple other
You're getting the multiple six or multiple five figures on those cameras, right? The Vericams and stuff like that.
It definitely climbs into the, you need to get somebody, an integrator and a consultant to kind of help guide you through that. But there's other options as well below, you know, the pocket camera. There's different models, but I don't know if I want to throw any out right now.
Because you don't want to necessarily recommend them. But.
Well, it's not that I don't, but there's just so many of them. It's, I like the M50, the Canon M50 is a really good for really cheap, $400 right now, refurb 4K. Not that you need 4K. That's a whole other discussion.
And we need to mention that too here in a minute.
We probably should discuss that a little bit.
Say, that's a.
In fact, why don't we do that right now?
Yeah, that sounds like.
I literally had a conversation was it today? Is it? I don't remember. All of my days are running together. It was today or yesterday.
They all do now.
With a pastor that was concerned about 4K streaming in 4K, and I was like, that's not a thing to even consider right now. And why is that?
Well, it's your bit rate's going to be so low to try to get the 4K up that it's going to lose any kind of quality you were trying to get in the first place. It's just much better to just stick with 1080 or 720, concentrate on getting a good bit rate for those. In other words, throw as much data to those resolutions so that, I've seen a couple. I think like Life Church does 4K stream and it looks amazing, but there's a reason they can do it. Yeah. They have a huge infrastructure that can handle that. Mm-hmm. But for average Joe Blow, it's just not practical.
It's not realistic at all.
And the other consideration for that is that, you know, the various streaming platforms that people are using, there's limitations on some of those. As far as what's actually being output and what they can actually output. So that's something to consider.
Like Facebook and YouTube, right?
Facebook, yeah, exactly. Facebook, you know, you're capped at 720. So, right. So there's no reason to jump up, above that at that point, especially if you're not, for most or the majority of the ministries that are out there. Mm-hmm. Again, if you've got the resources and the budgets to be able to do so, then great.
Yeah.
But the majority of the ones that are out there, you know, just trying to get into this world, this war world and new norm, you know, keep that in mind as well. There's a funneling process that you're going to be capped with some of these platforms.
Well, another thing,
go ahead.
Is that a lot of times people may not think about is the fact that compression deals with moving objects. So you have, if you've got something, if you've got a camera that's shaking a lot, you know, handheld, or you've got a lot of activity of the worship team, they're going all over and there's confetti and there's lighting, that's going to wreak havoc on your compression. Mm-hmm. So the more of that you have, the more pixelated your image is going to look. Mm-hmm. And so it's better if you've got a lot of motion on the stage, i.e. the worship team and lights, it's better to have more stationary shots. Not that they have to be locked off, but try not to be doing a lot of this because it's just going to be even more blurry and pixelated.
Yeah.
So it's more it's to get there's a way of getting a perceived increase in resolution by doing other things such as better lighting. Mm-hmm. And I say better lighting, it's a very generic way of saying it, but look at the contrast between the ratio between your subject and your background, make sure the background's a little darker. Some of the things I talked about, just too much color, too
like
much
this.
Detail. Exactly.
Exactly.
Sorry. All right.
So, and then I think even odd, it was just a really weird thing, but I think like, isn't there like, Ray, you can talk in this, but like whether there's a term psychoacoustics or whatever, where like even the fact that if the audio is really good, I think that would even make you think that the picture looks better. And I just don't want to say that as a lighting guy, but.
Yeah, yeah. Of course. No, I think, again, if, you know, if you've got pristine audio and whatnot, people are more forgiving on the video side than they are vice versa. And I mean, Richie said that earlier. It's the same concept. It's not to say that you don't want to be concerned about your video. You want to try to get the best, the right cameras, the right combination of cameras that fit your budget, the right type of lighting that is consistent lighting. The name of the game is consistency, and no matter in everything that we do.
Right.
But trying to keep your subjects. Plural, all the subjects that are going to be on video camera, trying to keep the lighting consistent across the board, is key to getting a great quality image.
Yeah,
exactly.
So 4K isn't something that you even need to worry about. The vast majority of people are streaming to Facebook and YouTube, and Facebook only takes 720. YouTube, does YouTube even stream at 4K, or they accept uploaded files at 4K?
But I think they will.
Uploaded files.
Yeah, I think they will take a 4K stream, but.
But it just doesn't make sense.
You don't want to do it.
It doesn't make sense.
It's great for uploads.
All right. I hope you've enjoyed so far. This discussion, and here we transition from the actual streaming to maybe some editing techniques, and specifically multicam,
like Final Cut Pro, Premiere, DaVinci Resolve. You were telling me this, Dan, last night. All of those have multicam options, and a lot of people aren't even utilizing that right now.
Yeah, exactly.
They're just like laying them all on top and then cutting the pieces out and that sort of thing. So I would say, I don't want to spend too much time on it, but I would say spend some time learning how to use the multicam options in one of those NLEs, one of those editor programs, because they will save you tons of time. I'm a Final Cut Pro guy, but all of my Premiere snobs don't like that. But I'm a Final Cut Pro X guy. It's super, super intuitive. You throw it in, you hit synchronize with using audio. It syncs all the audio the videos up using the audio waveforms, and then you just go in and like push which camera you want to, you play it and push which camera you want to show up. And it's as simple as that. It's like using a switcher,
A lot of times I have like a keyboard layout, that I have camera 1, 2, 3, 4 mapped to my number keys. If I have a 10 key on the extended keyboard. So I'm just sitting there watching live one, cut two, cut three, just like it's a live.
Love that. Interview. I haven't done that. I love that idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then of course, and I have some shortcuts too, where I'll go through one pass where I'll just go just live like that. And then I'll go back. And if I know I missed a reaction, like if I'm cutting an interview with somebody, I can just go trim it over, or I've got some keyboard shortcuts where I can say command 1, 2, 3, which then, changes the angle that's already been cut to another one. So in other words, if I hit the number, it'll razor blade and cut to it all in one keystroke.
Love it.
But if I hit command, it'll just change whatever, it'll take that whole clip and change the whole clip instead of razoring it or adding.
That's a great feature.
And I think you could do that on pretty much any of the NLEs we've talked about. There's ways of mapping the same thing.
So here's a suggestion that I have for a lot of churches. Now the larger organizations, this may not be a beneficial thing, but I think since we've kind of established that that church is going to be different moving forward anyway, then I think it's a mindset shift that we have to make in general as to what church looks like in person versus online. And so here's a solution that will solve a lot of issues for those of you who are really worried about, you know, moving forward, budget, personnel, all of this, because it's going to cost a lot to stream well. There's levels, but it's going to cost a lot, and you've also got to have personnel. Like we said, audio guy, you got to have a dedicated audio guy. You got to have somebody that's on the switcher. All of that, and those things are skilled positions. They're not really something that somebody can just do it. You know. So
not so much a volunteer position.
No, not so much. It's a very difficult thing. And so you're either contracting people or you're having to spend time training your volunteers over a period of time before they can get to this, to the level that they need to get
exactly.
to be able to utilize those skills. So the suggestion that I have is let's say we go to looking at a calendar. Let's say June the 7th is your first weekend. You're going to go live with people on the first weekend on June 7th. All right. So you're thinking, okay, we got to be live streaming by June the 7th. Here's the alternative. Alternative is the week before June the 7th, June the 1st through the 5th, whenever it is that you typically record right now in the COVID world, whenever you're recording your stuff, post-producing to post-produce it, go ahead and do another one that week, the week before the 7th, get it produced, put it in the can, and get it ready to go. And on June the 7th, while you're having a live service, stream the recorded, the pre-recorded, post-edited one on June the 7th. And then on in the room on June the 7th, use what you have right now, which is probably DSLRs. I'm making a lot of assumptions, but I'm assuming it's probably DSLRs or some other cameras that you got that some of your volunteers have been have learned how to use decently, and they've learned how to record. Use it in the live room, but record it. Record everything, multi-track all of your worship in some sort of a DAW, right? So multi-track that, record all of your cameras, and then post-produce all of that. You have a week to post-produce it, and you're going to air June 7th's services on June the 14th online. And so this is not really a new concept, but it's new to people that aren't familiar with broadcast TV. Right. So this is what Dan was telling us last night. Dan's done a lot of broadcast TV stuff. And I want you to talk about kind of what that looked like then in just a second. But what I want to make clear here is that so from now on, if you can shift your mindset to this, what you shoot and what you preach on one weekend is all going to be played the following weekend. So you've got two different experiences. You've got the live experience and you have the online experience, and they are two different services. And so what this does, this accomplishes several things. The first thing it does is it eliminates your need to immediately go to a live streaming situation. It allows you to, if you really want to go live, you've got as many months as you want to do a ramp up into live. So you don't have to go out and buy all of these new cameras that work mm-hmm. for a live stream. You don't have to have a switcher right now. You don't have to pay another audio engineer to be there to record, to do all that stuff live. You're doing everything that you've been doing. You're just recording it on Sunday in front of people. That's the only difference. So you're able to keep the same workflow going. It's just going to play a week later. So what that requires is one small mindset shift. If you're going to be, if your church that does series, for example, and let's say your series, you're going to preach the first weekend of the series is June 7th. That's the first weekend. Don't advertise the series as starting on June 7th. You advertise for your online audience. Everything that you're posting on social is posting the sermon that's going to play back online the following week. So if you shoot and preach the sermon for the first week of this series on June the 7th, you're advertising that the series begins on June the 14th, because that's the series that's going to play. The first weekend of the series is going to play on June the 14th, even though you recorded it on the 7th. So that's a little bit weird at first. The mindset is a little weird, but it's actually very doable. And Ray, you had a really good solution for situations like, because I know people are asking, but what about Mother's Day or Easter or Christmas?
Right.
Those are days that have to happen. One of the things, Ray, you mentioned was, tell me what your solution was.
Yeah, I think the solution for that is, again, changing the mindset, but understanding that if you, for instance, Mother's Day, if you take Mother's Day, and you're obviously going to address the mothers on Mother's Day that are there live in the service, right? Mm-hmm. So you're going to, in your service, you're going to acknowledge the fact that it's Mother's Day, or any other holiday. This applies to pretty much all holidays. You know, if you make that a part or an element of your service, that's something that for the next weekend can be actually edited out. And we're not just taking that part out only, but from the previous week, we're actually pre-producing an element or a segment that does acknowledge and honor, say, Mother's or Father's Day or whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. If we're talking about June, let's use Father's Day as an example. But same mindset of pre-produce an element strictly for the online community that speaks to them directly as it relates to honoring mothers and fathers in that particular.
So like a feature video, which you would be doing anyway. A lot of guys are going to be doing a feature video where their kids are telling them Happy Mother's Day. They're already going to be pre-producing that anyway, right?
Absolutely.
Just go ahead and do that, and then play that back on the live stream. Put it in the recording, and
correct,
play that back on that week. So tell me what your solution was for. Because, all right, so for example, Mother's Day, I'm just using Mother's Day as an example because we just did it.
Yeah.
But Mother's Day falls on a certain day. If you acknowledge it on that day live in the house, you're recording mm-hmm. for next week. So what do you do?
So at that point, you take that piece, because it's being post-produced and it's being edited later. You take that Mother's Day piece from that day and edit that part out.
You just cut it out.
Yeah, I just cut it out. The following week, obviously, is not going to be Mother's Day. It's going to be over at that point.
That's good.
But again, from the previous week, you've already inserted it, so it's already. And the thing about that is it should get you a week or so ahead. If, like you said, most people produce something for Mother's Day, Father's Day, various, and sometimes a lot of times that's pre-produced in the can. It should, with this mindset, it should put you a couple of weeks in advance to pre-producing those type of feature videos.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
And Dan, talk a little bit about that broadcast mindset that you were talking about. This isn't really new. It's just new for a lot of people that are in church, right?
Yeah, I think it's new for people that have never done live or broadcasting before from church. But this is something that's been a staple of the Christian TV ministry paradigm for 30, 40 years, from Rex Humbard to Oral Roberts to Joel Osteen, where I was at for a long time. And so the fact that you just have to think of it, like you said, in advance, basically. What we taught, we would always just refer to it as we're 2 weeks ahead, or we're a week ahead. For a week ahead, we're getting real nervous, because that means we have no pad to fix any problems.
Mm-hmm.
So a week ahead really means you're 2 weeks from the air date, because you have to get it to the station a week or so, or at least a few days before they air, usually a week. So, mm-hmm. of course, that's not really an issue with YouTube and Facebook. As far as, you can stream it the night before, or you can upload it the night before or premiere it. But why do you do that to yourself?
Yeah.
I just feel like,
you're killing your team.
I think, for Joel Osteen, out of the 52 weeks out of the year, I don't know, I can't remember the exact numbers, but it was maybe, 45 weeks were actually aired. But of course they were all, it happened on a Sunday, and then 3 weeks later, the edited version would air, and then the other weeks that were the difference between those dates would be re-airs or reruns mm-hmm. that were the best of, mm-hmm. And then like the Mother's Day and the Christmas, Thanksgiving, those are all things, like you said, Ray, too, you're already thinking about it. So you could even put like a fun little video, but with the kids, you could put that into the show that actually aired on Mother's Day.
Right.
Even though we don't, even though it's, it's happened in advance, that the service happened the week before or 2 weeks, hopefully, but we are already thinking ahead. So, you know, it takes a little bit of forethought, and also maybe, you know, the more you do it, you'll want to add staff and or volunteers to help just organize all that. Think about it.
So here's another thing that I would just say too. The one of the other issues that I know a lot of pastors are going to have with that is that a lot of pastors, we in ministry, we like to call it inspirational, but sometimes it's also just last minute. Whether it's last minute or inspirational or following after the Spirit, any of those three things all have the same effect on your team. So regardless, but there are a lot of pastors that want to be able to speak in the moment in a situation that's live. And so one of the other options in the situation like this, you can either post-produce the entire weekend and play it back the following week, or you can post-produce the worship, throw that into ProPresenter, for example, for the next week, hit playback, and play back last week's worship with all of the edits and all of the bells and whistles and the nice overlays and everything like that, and the cool lower thirds and the transitions and all of it, and color correction. Play all that back in ProPresenter, and then switch live to a camera that doesn't require one or two cameras, that doesn't require a lot of really expertise situations. So you've got a mixture, a hybrid situation where you're post-producing your worship, which is the one that's going to require the best mix and audio and all of that, and then go live with your pastor on the weekend, which that's another option as well. And that's something that they've also done on broadcast for a while too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, many TV shows I used to work for, that we would record the worship team. We might do 10 songs in one day, and then we would play back those two or three or however many we had. We could play them back as roll-ins, we called them.
Yeah.
During the live program. Mm-hmm. So there's a couple of things that accomplishes is not only are your resources kind of focused on that one thing at that moment, and then you've got a little time to fix any mistakes in editing, but it also allows you to get your cameras in different positions than because really you want to have them all in optimal position for the pastor. So they're looking great. But if you're going to compromise, if you're having to set them up that works for both the pastor's angles and the worship team, because it's like a totally different thing. Mm-hmm. Like I was watching, I looked on Facebook and I saw a picture of one church's setup, and they had the singers behind this couch. They were like in a little office, and they had them behind the couch because the pastor was going to come out later and be in front of the couch where he was going to stand. And I was wondering, can you get, you know, they're like no depth, and you could see like the wrinkle in the curtain, and just, you know.
Yeah.
But if it had been pre-recorded, they could have just put them out there. And the fact that, they think, well, they'll know they were in the same spot. Who cares? They won't even really think about it, honestly.
And it's not that important anymore.
No, you can fix it with a little edit, kind of trick them into, you know, if you want. But
yeah, because the most important thing when you're thinking about shooting that is shooting it in a style where the audience, it feels most natural for the audience.
Right.
You know, and it's not, because you don't want to give the impression that as the audience, you know, if you're thinking about, you know, looking into a home or into a venue or whatnot, you don't want to see it from the perspective of, oh, I'm looking through a window to see inside what's going on. You want to feel like you're in the room.
Yeah.
So every camera shot is critical to make it feel like, okay, the person that's watching is actually inside the room versus observing from a distance. You know, it's one of the main reasons we don't like to put cameras all the way in the back of the room. You want the cameras closer to make you feel like you're inside the room. So, I mean, that's a good way to camera make a difference. Make a huge difference.
Well, let me say this too. just for clarity's sake, guys, what we're saying is you're recording the live service experience. You're not recording some studio version. You're recording the live service. You're multi-tracking the live service, so you still get the live feel, right? So you still get that live feel in the room. The difference is you're post-producing it, and you've got a week at least. You've got a week to edit it, to fix it, to fix the pitch. Pitch is one of the biggest issues with live stream. Yeah. I don't care how good you are, if you watch the actual live stream of some of your favorite artists, the vast majority of the time you're going to hear a bunch of mess, and then they're going to take it down, and in a few hours they're going to repost it, and it's going to be something that their staff has been busy behind the scenes between that last service and the time that they drop it on YouTube, where they have re-edited, they've added stems, or they've done all kinds of stuff to pretty it up, right? Yeah. So it ain't as pretty as you think it is when it's actually live. Right. And so this gives you that opportunity, right? It gives you the opportunity to really put your best foot forward as a church and as a ministry to your online audience and still have a live feel and a live audience as well. So you get the best of both worlds. One of the other great benefits of doing it this way is if you do want to go live stream at some point, you have a long ramp to train volunteers. So you can actually have you can purchase a switcher as you can afford it. You don't have to buy all the equipment at one time. You can start to buy one camera this month, you buy another camera in 2 months when your budget is ready for it, and you start to add that stuff. You buy a switcher at some point, you integrate it, and then you let them practice on the weekends. Because you're recording to the cameras already, it doesn't matter if somebody's on the switcher practicing and they're learning that. You can let them learn it. They can practice a switcher. They can practice another audio mixer to get a good mix. And none of that has to be used for the following week for when it actually airs. But it gives
That's a great point.
Does that make sense? It gives your people every week is training week at that point.
Yeah. Because and you can even do like a private stream as a test during those weeks.
Yes.
That's a great way of just practicing. Is the technology working? Just a private stream to YouTube. I think you can do the same thing to Facebook. I'm not sure, but you can also record the program or the output of the switcher.
Yeah.
Which has got all your cuts, but also record internally on your cameras. So whatever cut the volunteer is learning on the switcher doesn't really matter. It may be great and it could be used, but it could be also quote fixed with the internal cards where they can sync those all up in an LE or editing software and make it whatever you like.
I think it's a really good option. And the pastors that I've talked to have been like, man, that takes a ton of pressure off of me. And it takes a ton of pressure off of my team, because you know as well as I do that when shifts like this happen, it's hard on the pastor, and then it flows down from there, and it's hard on the team because he's asking a lot. And some pastors, some people just in general, they don't really realize how much it takes to do these things, right? Like, it's just a video. You know, it's only going to take you a few minutes to edit it. Now it's going to take about 12 hours, you know?
Right.
You know, so it takes a bunch of pressure off of you. It gives you the opportunity to have a week to fix anything. And
at the end of the day, there's nothing that would stop it from getting better at that point week to week, because the pressure is off.
Yes.
Because the end goal at the end of the day, the end goal is to get the best, really to give God our best. Right. So as a church, as a production team, as pastors and all that, the end goal is to give God our absolute best. Well, if you take that pressure off of ourselves and again, change the mindset a little bit, there's other ways to approach this that, you know, essentially, I mean, it's not a new way, you know, basically what Aaron, you used the term, Dan, the other night. It's the episodic type mindset. Essentially that it's episodic mindset of essentially thinking ahead, and what makes a great production or any product that has excellence, I mean, it's taking that pre-production time and that planning time in order to make it great. And that's usually the elements that most volunteers and church contractors and church production teams usually don't have that opportunity to plan and prep and all that. And this adds that element back in there.
That's good.
Right.
I think one of the pastors that I talked to used this this terminology. They said, we are committed to becoming a virtual organization with a physical expression. And I actually love that. I love that concept. I think moving forward, that's kind of something we need to be considering. So
absolutely.
We need to be placing our focus on producing stuff that is viewable way after the live service. And we just have a physical expression of that. And it's a flip-flop of the way that we've been doing ministry. But if you think about it, it gives you such a larger platform. Online ministry gives you much larger of a platform than you do for local. And so if you can switch your mindset to, let's prioritize the online experience. And how do we do that the best? And at the same time, we can feed the people that are live in the room. But let's prioritize that online experience. Become a virtual organization with a physical expression. Your campuses are physical expressions of your virtual organization. I really love that.
I love that. Yeah.
Love the way that was worded.
I'll be stealing that at some point in
yes.
time. Just to let you know.
Yes. a lot of people are just like, okay, well, let's, but what if we do want to go live? You know, it doesn't matter. We still want to go live.
Yeah.
So what if we do want to go live? What does that look like? And there are benefits, there's still some benefits to going live, but I think, I think you're putting your best foot forward if you have the opportunity to post-produce content.
Well, I also, too, just on that other paradigm about we're pre-recording 2 weeks or a couple weeks in advance, is that if the pastor just feels like, you know, we've got it all in the can, so to speak, all the episodes are ready to air, but he just feels all of a sudden Wednesday before, you know what, I really feel like I have a word I need to get live. Mm-hmm. Well, then you have the flexibility, of course, doing that with YouTube, and then you could still roll in the worship team still have that pressure off.
Yes.
So you still have that flexibility. Broadcast, it was a lot harder to do that. But I will say churches should also look at broadcasting. It's still a very much of a player.
On TV?
TV broadcasting. And I think they're more open to content from churches now that I'm seeing, you know.
Yeah, they are. They are.
There's some opportunities
there. I remember one of the best books I ever read was by a guy you worked with a long time, Phil Cook, The Last TV Evangelist.
Oh, yeah, Phil, yeah.
The Last TV Evangelist. That was such a great book, and he's talking a lot about broadcast and that sort of thing, yeah.
Yeah, he was my – he used to sit on the studio floor with us and hold out art books and show us, see, this is good lighting. This is back when I was a student 30 years ago, 33 years ago.
I love it.
There you go telling your age again.
I know. Oh, maybe it's 25 years ago.
Yeah, something like that. Something like that, yeah. Yeah.
So somebody had a question. I brought this up to my pastor, but his concern was to address the audience during Sunday services and leave the physical congregation hanging or vice versa. How would y'all handle this dynamic? I think the question that they're asking is, should the pastor address the online audience in favor of the physical audience in the room? And I don't think that necessarily has to be any different than it has been in the past to do what we're talking about, right? I think he still preaches to the people. I don't know. What are your thoughts, guys?
My thoughts are this. I've seen a trend of there being online hosts for a lot of churches, a lot of ministries. It's like you're in a live service and you cut away to the online host. I think that works great in some scenarios. I don't know that it works great in all scenarios. And I think there's, depending on your ministry style, I think I feel, my personal opinion is, it's probably a good idea that your pastor is addressing everyone as if they're in the room. Again, if the idea is that, you know, we're showing this stream with the thought that you want to make your audience watching it on the stream feel like they're a part of the audience, then the pastor should actually address the entire audience. In my opinion, I think that's probably the answer to that I would say, as opposed to separating it Because if you acknowledge, okay, now to the online audience, then it tells the audience, okay, you're somewhere else.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, as opposed to being in the room itself.
Yeah, it's so kind of like breaks that fourth wall kind of situation.
It breaks that fourth wall. So I'm of the opinion of let folks stay in the room. Mm-hmm. Don't take them out of that element and address them separately.
Yeah.
That's just my opinion. Not everybody feels that way.
Yeah, no, I think that's good. I think it's going to depend on the church and the pastor and their, mm-hmm. their style and their. Mm-hmm. I know that John Osteen kind of took a kind of a hybrid approach where mm-hmm. he would be preaching to the crowd in the sanctuary, but that the camera that was on the stage, that was whenever he looked at that camera, he looked into the lens, and that was the TV audience.
Yeah.
And so, but all the other cameras, he wasn't looking at them. Mm-hmm. So it was, in fact, the camera guy knew if he turned that direction, he would kind of like, you know, kind of focus in on him yeah. a little bit. And he also really encouraged the congregation to enter in as a part of they were part of the worship or the ministry team. So mm-hmm. they looked at it as a ministry, not just John Osteen preaching to the TV audience. But every person in that room, if that camera was on them, they knew that they were representing the whole ministry. So they didn't see it as invasive. Yeah. I know a lot of churches. I know they feel like, well, they're not used to having a camera in the room, and they don't want to put a camera that's going to block the people behind them. Mm-hmm. I think, and those are all valid things to consider. But another thing to consider would be the fact that. I think if the person behind that camera understood where it was going and the people that it was affecting and reaching, mm-hmm. then they would probably be a little less grumpy maybe about not being able to see it. And of course, you could put a TV behind the camera and stuff sure. like that. But
my brother Andy, who has been commenting, I've seen he's on, and Vincent and some of the other guys are on.
Yeah, hey guys.
Chatting. But one of the things that Andy is always told to the teams that he's worked with is that the message goes through your hands. And so the word of God is coming through the pastor and through the minister, but it, for anybody that's doing production or creative or anything like that, the message has to go through your hands before it's delivered to the audience. Like front of house guy, it's got to go through you first before it gets to the audience. Video guys, it's got to go through you. Right. iMac people, it's got to go through you before it gets to the audience. Online people, it's got to go through you. And so understanding that you're as much a part of that ministry and the word that and the spirit that goes into that. And if you don't have a clean vessel, then that mm-hmm. word is actually tainted by your lack of a good heart and that sort of thing. But the fact of the matter is you are a big part of it. And anybody that's involved in that is a big part of it. It's not just pastors. So it is a form of ministry to do any of that and to be in the room and to be worshiping live in that room is a form of ministry if you're doing online audience as well. So
absolutely.
So that whole shift in mindset of pre-recording on a weekend and posting it the following weekend, that's just a ministry mindset is really what it is. And so you're able to care for your local congregation, but you're also able to reach a wider group the following mm-hmm. week with excellence. And that's the whole point, right? One of the things that Pastor Jeremy said this one time, and I made fun of him, and then we actually started using it. But anything that distracts is a distraction. And it sounds really shallow, but it's not shallow at all. It's actually very, very important. Mm-hmm. That's the reason why it's so important to have excellence in these areas, is because if you've got bad camera shots or the audio stinks or there's a white balance issue between cameras, it's going to distract from the message. Right. It's going to distract. And if it distracts, it's a distraction. It's going to affect people's ability to receive what they need to receive. I had a great conversation with a guy today, and he wanted me to kind of look over his online stream. One of the things that I noticed that there was the lower thirds, there was some text issues with the lower thirds. They weren't spelled right or whatever. And I said, that's a distraction. It's right. It just is. Yeah. So have a hand on that. Have eyes on that. You know. So excellence is important. There's a reason why we push for excellence, and sometimes we think it's excellence for excellence's sake. And if you get into that mindset, that's a whole different thing, right? If a church gets into excellence for excellence sake, or just professionalism and just to be professional, that's a whole thing. But if you're doing it with the right motives and the background and the reasoning behind it is, we're doing this and we want to be excellent because we want to make sure that we can reach the maximum amount of people with the message and not distract. That's
super important. We have to communicate clearly.
Yes.
You have to communicate because anything that interrupts that communication of the word, you know, it's just to me. Yeah, I totally agree with what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. So let's talk about gear. So let's talk about it. So there's lots of different options, and I want to talk. We are running a little bit late, so we're going to go. Let's give it 15 more minutes, and let's just kind of run through gear options, and let's run through for video, and let's run through audio capture options as well, and switcher situation, because the switcher situation is a big deal too. A lot of people want to use Sling Studio. A lot of people are trying to use different software solutions. I think I know what you're going to offer, Dan, but give me two solutions, a budget solution for a switcher, and then a higher level and the pros and cons of those guys.
Well, I think, at the low end, and it's turning out to be a really great option, is the little ATEM Mini Pro.
Yes.
You know,
it's shockingly good.
It's shockingly good. And there's some really amazing things about it, and some features in it that aren't even in the higher level switchers, because I think there were like, you know what, let's just cram everything into this little box because we can. And we're going to sell a whole lot of them, which they have.
Yes, they have.
You know, it's got the built-in encoder for YouTube or Facebook. I don't think it can go to both, but we can go one at a time. It's also got a built-in recorder, so you could just literally connect an SSD, like a little Samsung T5 flash drive to the USB bus and record your stream.
And one of the other things that I think it offers as well is just not just streaming to YouTube or Facebook, but also to like a custom RTMP. Stream, right?
Yeah, and absolutely.
If it does that, then you could technically hook that up to Restream.io and send it to multiple platforms at the same time.
Exactly. So it's really amazing. I think overall, I was going to say is that I think it is smart. As soon as you can get away from software switchers, the better.
Yes.
I think they're a great way to start, and they're very approachable. But they also require a lot of resources that people don't think about, or they are thinking about because they're always asking, well, what MacBook Pro do I need? Which PC do I need that's fast enough to run OBS or Wirecast? Well, if you have a hardware switcher, like just even an ATEM Mini, which starts at, what, $300 or
$299. The Mini Pro is $299, the Pro is $599, right?
So then basically you're offloading all of the processing needed onto a piece of hardware that's all it does. Your computer can then run the GUI or the graphical user interface of the switcher. So you can load in still graphics. You can adjust your audio. You can add compression.
Chroma key, you know, all that options kind of stuff. As well.
Chroma key. I think it's got Chroma. I know it's got a Luma key. I'm pretty sure it's got Chroma key.
Yeah.
But it's got you know, full alpha channel support for lower thirds. So I think in general, I would say definitely go to a hardware switcher. You know, you can go up in the line to the next Blackmagic. It's great. But then, you know, like the Television Studio, I think HD, which is the little rack unit.
Mm-hmm. That's the Production Studio
for $1,000. Yeah, it's got the little colored push buttons on it.
Yeah.
It's $1,000, I think. And, you know, but then you have to get more converters Now that has four HDMIs and four SDIs. So then that's nice as far as you've got more flexibility there. Mm-hmm. But everything's got to be at the same resolution, same frame rate of all your cameras.
It's fickle. It's fickle at that point, which is so funny to me because that Atom Mini is it'll accept whatever you give it to on an HDMI.
Yeah,
but
this one you have to add additional scalers and
you have to add a scaler like with the Production Studio 4K and all of that, and so it's
for every input.
It goes from 3,000 to you know 5,000 because you got to buy scalers for everything that costs $300 to $600 a piece. You know,
absolutely,
exactly. Yeah, I think there's, you know, there's some other, I know a lot of people talk about some of the software solutions that are like vMix is real popular on PC. Of course, OBS is real popular because it's free and it runs on either PC or Mac. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think the sooner you can get away to a hardware switcher, and you can also use a hybrid where you can use a Blackmagic switcher feeding into OBS and then use OBS just for overlays or for like a downstream operator that can do additional graphical support and that kind of thing, pre-rolls, post-rolls, that kind of thing.
So as far, let me just say this real quick and then Ray, I'll get back to you, but I would just say as far as like implementing gear and a full gear list of stuff that are options, anybody that's watching, these are the guys to talk to about that. Dan and Ray are the guys to talk to about that because they can help you figure out what works best for your situation. And I can help too, but these guys are just as are the top of their game. So they can help figure that out. Like, why do we need to use Wirecast? Do we need to use OBS? What are these different things? So we can do that. And any of us can help you, and feel free to email any of us. And if I can't answer the question, I can give the question to them or whatever. But, like I said before, it's, just a little plug for these guys. It's useless to buy gear if you don't have training on that gear. And these guys are great at that. They can train and they can help you with that stuff. And we all have that the ability to help with those kinds of things. But Ray, you said it great. You said it's an expense to buy the gear.
Yeah.
How did you say it?
Yeah, I mean it. The mindset is when you purchase the gear, it's an expense. When you purchase it, when you actually train your people to use it, it turns that expense into an investment at that point.
Yes.
And so think of it from money that you're spending as an investment, not only into your team, into your contractors, volunteers, whatnot, but also it's investment into the kingdom. You know, thinking about what we're doing this for, it's an investment into the kingdom. But if you don't add that training aspect to actually help your team go to the next level, then you'll always see it as an expense. Yes. You'll think, man, why did we buy this gear when it doesn't work? And oftentimes it's not because it doesn't work. It just maybe the team actually just needs more training on it because there may be things that they just haven't found.
Yep. And I would just say to anybody that's watching too that investing in coaches, a lot of pastors invest in coaches to help them get better. Invest in coaches and consultants to help in these areas as well. Any of us are available. Me, Dan, Ray are available to help in those areas as well. So reach out and you're going to get a great experience with any of these guys. So we talked about switcher. We talked a little bit about cameras. And also we've said the 4K, the Pocket Cinema 4Ks are great. Their battery life is horrendous, by the way. I've had no luck. We need to get a juice box. I need to get one of those juice boxes, I think. What works for you?
Hold on a second. Hold on. Let me get my camera. I'll show it to you real quick.
Okay.
Hold
on. All right, cool. But the one good thing about it is they've also got a DC. The Black Magics have a DC.
They do.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry. So this is the full cage by Small HD. And so it allows me to put a Samsung T5 card on here so that I can record like 7 hours of ProRes. And then over here we've got quarter 20s everywhere. So I've got another adapter that I put a Sony battery on here. So it'll give me like 2-3 hours. So, and I just use that with the dummy Canon that goes in here in place of the actual battery. So basically the built-in camera, the built-in Canon battery only goes like 30, 40, 50 minutes sometimes. So that's the solution to that. You just add another battery, or in a church setting streaming, I would just plug it into AC power.
Yeah. Which is the great option that has that a lot of these DSLRs don't.
So really you could just, you know, relegate battery to just the guy that's doing handheld or, you know, wireless camera or something.
That's good. Yeah. What are some other things we need to talk about as far as gear is concerned?
Somebody asked, I forgot his name. It was somewhere in here about lenses for the pocket 4K camera.
Yeah.
If you can go Canon glass, that's great. You can get a Metabones adapter. That'll get you really shallow depth of field. But for real just ease of use and lower cost, but still looks really sharp, or just some Panasonic native Micro Four Thirds lenses. If you can swing the ones that are f/2.8, that's going to look the best. But if not, even just the kit quote lenses that you can get for $150 track really well for, or they don't track focus, but they work well with the touch to focus function on there.
So that's it for this week, and thanks so much for listening. Please consider giving me a 5-star rating on iTunes and comment if there's anything you'd like me to cover in future episodes, and let me know what you think. You can reach me at my website, danrubottom.com, and on Instagram, Vimeo, Twitter, and Facebook. Also, you can reach Richie Allen at hello@therichieallen.com. That's Richie without a T. And Ray Givens, ray@12.org. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. I'd like to close out with the following verse, which is one of my favorites. Psalm 1. Blessed is the one who does not walk in step with the wicked, or stand in the way that sinners take, or sit in the company of mockers, but whose delight is in the law of the Lord, and who meditates on his law day and night. That person is like a tree planted by streams of water, which yield its fruit in season, and whose leaf does not wither. Whatever they do prospers. This is the Production Pro Podcast. Learn the craft, be creative, and go make something great.